So I've been doing a message series called Characters, and that's because the New Testament characters, you know, Jesus, Paul, James, all the disciples, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, all of them, right? All of them, they reflect back on other characters in the Bible, like Adam and Eve and Moses and Noah and Abraham. They reflect back on them, and they're, as they're reflecting back on those characters, they're seeing a more full picture of who God is, what God is doing, and how they are a part of it, okay? And so we're going to do that same thing today. We've got a story that many people might be familiar with. It's about Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel, right? You, even if you've never been to church before, you may know about Cain and Abel. You may know this much. Like, there's two people in the Bible, one killed the other. You might even be like, oh, yeah, they were brothers, and they one killed the other. And you might even know, like, oh, yeah, it was Cain, the older brother, killed Abel, the younger brother. But the point is like, sometimes that's the end of the story for us. That's all we know about the story, and it's just done. But it's so much deeper. It's so cool. And so what I've done, this just was helpful for me, and so hopefully it'll be helpful for you. Taken the Cain and Abel story, and I've taken the New Testament reflections on it, the people of the New Testament, and I've overlaid that. And so as we walk through, we'll see how they're reflecting on the different pieces of the Cain and Abel story. And through that, it was helpful for me to discover, wow, there's so much more to this. And it's really actually quite simple as we see how God acts with Cain and Abel, Cain specifically, and what he wants us to be like and how we respond to him, okay? So, you ready? Let's just dive in. Let's just take a look. So, this is Genesis chapter 4. We're just going to dive in. If you've got a Bible, you can open it up there. If you've got our church app, you've got the notes that's all laid out there, and you can interact with it. So, let's just take a look at what this is about. Genesis chapter 4. I'm going to start in verse 1. Now Adam had sexual relations with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant. When she gave birth to Cain, she said, "With the Lord's help, I have produced a man." Later she gave birth to his brother and named him Abel. When they grew up, Abel became a shepherd, while Cain cultivated the ground. When it was time for the harvest, Cain presented some of the crops as a gift to the Lord. Abel also brought a gift, the best portions of the firstborn lambs of his flock. The Lord accepted Abel and his gift, but he did not accept Cain and his gift. This made Cain very angry, and he looked dejected. Now, if you've been familiar with the story, you've read that, and you're like, oh, okay, yep, that's how the story goes. But the question is, what is going on here? Right? We see this fulfillment from Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3, where God blesses human beings to go and rule over all the things that he has made, right? The birds in the sky, the animals on the ground, the fish in the water, and to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and to subdue the earth, right? And we see that happening here. We see Abel is ruling over animals, and Cain is cultivating the ground. All right, this is great. And at some point, they come to God. I don't know, maybe it's like an altar that they set up or something, and they bring some gift to God. Okay? For some reason, Abel's gift is accepted, and Cain's gift isn't. But it's actually more than just the gift. Did you pick up on what actually it said? God accepted what? Abel and his gift, but he did not accept Cain and his gift. So there's some kind of like personal thing going on in there. There's some kind of relational thing that's just breaking down at the altar for some reason, right? And we're not really sure what it is at this point. But the New Testament writers, they've reflected on this. And this very part of the story. In fact, the writer of Hebrews, whoever that was, the writer of Hebrews wrote about what we should see in this, Hebrews 11:4. It was by faith that Abel brought a more acceptable offering to God than Cain did. Abel's offering gave evidence that he was a righteous man. And God showed his approval for his gift, of his gift. Although Abel is long dead, he still speaks by the example of his faith. Let me just clarify. Sometimes faith gets muddied in our thinking. And so the English word trust better fulfills what this word is, okay? So Abel trusted God with something, right? And through trusting God with something, it showed that he did something righteous. The way I interpret righteous is doing right by someone. So doing right by God and doing right by other people. He was doing right by God and other people. So by coming to God at this altar, presenting this gift, he was in a right relationship with God. He was doing what was right. And he was trusting God with something, right? Now, we can look into it and try to break it down and like, well, he gave the best of his flock and the firstborn and all that, so he's really trusting God that he's going to continue to provide, even if I give up the best thing. And then you have Cain. What's going on with Cain, right? There's something going on with Cain where, is it a trust issue? Is it evidence in the way that he's bringing the gift to God? You know, we still don't know. It's actually quite vague of what's happening here. So let's just take that with us. Like, we just want to know what's going on with Cain, right? If Abel's trusting God and he's doing right by God and other people, where is Cain's relationship with God and other people going, okay? So let's continue in the story because God is going to intervene. Verse 6 starts with, why are you so angry? Why are you so angry, the Lord asked Cain. Why do you look so dejected? You will be accepted if you do what is right. But if you refuse to do what is right, then watch out. Sin is crouching at the door, eager to control you, but you must subdue it and be its master. I just want to pause here for a second, okay? If we're doing a good job of reading our Bible, Genesis 1 through 3 so far, because we're in chapter 4 here, we know that they were told to subdue the land, right? They were supposed to subdue that, rule over all the animals. But apparently, we can also subdue and rule over this sin that's acting like an animal, that's wanting to lash out at you and devour you. Did you pick up on that? Isn't it kind of cool? So there's something going on with Cain. But if we back up just a little bit more, God tells him to do what is right. If you do what is right, you'll be accepted. Isn't that what you want? You want to be accepted. So if you do what is right, the question is, what is the thing that is supposed to be, that's the right thing to do, right? What's the right thing to do at this point? What are you supposed to do, right? That's our question. And I want to sit there for a minute because it's not until we understand the full story and get the reflections from the New Testament writers that we can even see what the right thing is he's supposed to do. Because had he done it at the beginning, at the altar, done the right thing, he wouldn't be feeling dejected or separate from God in any way. He wouldn't feel angry. There's something that would have changed. The story would have went different. And God's addressing that. Like, you have a chance right now, right here, to do what is right, whatever that right thing is, right? So just think about that. What's that right thing that Cain is supposed to have done that would have changed the storyline, okay? So God intervenes and talks with Cain, just like he does with Adam and Eve, gives them some direction. And so he gives them some direction. You can rule over this. You can master it. You can do the right thing, okay? Let's continue on our story to see if Cain actually does the right thing. Verse 8, one day Cain suggested to his brother, let's go out into the fields. And while they were in the fields, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Do you realize that the actual murder of Cain is like one sentence long? That's not the main focus. The main focus is God's interaction with Cain because it's going to do it here again. It's just real brief. We don't get any details about it. We don't get anything like that. But all we know is that Cain certainly has not done right by other people, by his brother Abel, right? He has killed him. For some reason, Cain sees in his mind that the right thing to do to solve his problem, the way that he's feeling, how the anger and feeling dejected, is to get rid of Abel. Just in the storyline so far, what has Abel done to his brother? Anything bad? Anything mean? He's done everything right. He's like this righteous one. And here's this righteous one that's being killed by someone else. Okay? So why is he taking it out on Abel? There's something not going right in there. And that's what I want to know. Why did Cain kill Abel? What? Why did he take it out on him? One of his disciples, one that lived the longest, John, he wrote about this in 1 John chapter 3, verse 12. We must not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and killed his brother. And why did he kill him? Great question. I'd love to know the answer to that. Because Cain had been doing what was evil, and his brother had been doing what was right. So John reflects on this portion of this of the story and says, you know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing that the motive for Cain to kill his brother is because Abel was doing what was right. And for some reason, Cain didn't like that. Maybe because it revealed his own wrongness, doing the wrong thing. And instead of addressing what he needs to deal with, he takes it out on his brother, eliminates Abel. Now, there's also a phrase here where he belongs to the evil one, okay? And so we can think in our mind like, oh, he had no choice, right? He just belonged to the evil one, and that's the reason why he committed this murder. So, you know, when I do bad things or when someone does really bad things, kills other people, they just belong to the evil one. They had no choice. But when you look at the story, it doesn't say that at all. He has lots of choices. At the altar at the beginning, then God intervenes and talks with him. He's got a choice to make. He can choose to do what is right, or he can do what is not right. He can choose to belong to God, or he can choose to belong to the evil one. He has a choice to make. It's still there ready for him. God allows him to make the choice. And he chose which one? He chose to belong to the evil one. It's almost like going back into Genesis chapter 3, where Adam and Eve are standing at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and they were told not to eat from it. And they're like, well, I know God says that would be bad for us to do that, but we think it would be good, so we're going to do it anyway. It's like Cain is standing there at the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, and is like, yeah, I know that's the right thing to do, but I'm going to choose to do this instead, okay? It's kind of like that same theme that's going on there. So how is God going to deal with this? What's the next part of the story? Let's take a look. Starting in verse 9, says, afterward, the Lord asked Cain. Now, again, this should be familiar to us with Genesis chapter 3, God coming to Adam and Eve and talking with them, okay? Afterward, the Lord asked Cain, where's your brother? Where is Abel? I don't know, Cain responded. Am I my brother's guardian? But the Lord said, what have you done? All right, just stop there. You see, I've highlighted this because that word, that phrase, what have you done, is exactly the same thing that God said to Eve in the chapter before when he finds out that she has eaten of the tree. He says the same thing. What have you done? Look it up. I'm not making it up, okay? So there's a pattern that's going on here. And God invites him in to feel like, dude, did you do the thing that I told you not to do? Is that what you did? So God continues. Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Pay attention to that. What is it saying? What does that mean? That someone's blood is crying out, right? We're going to pick up on that in a second. Your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are cursed and banished from the ground, which has swallowed your brother's blood. No longer will the ground yield good crops for you, no matter how hard you work. From now on, you will be a homeless wanderer on the earth. What did Cain do? What was his job? He cultivated what? The ground. And now because he has chosen not to do the right thing, we'll get back to that, what that right thing is, the story has gotten worse for him. the decisions that he continues to make in the wrong direction, it gets worse and worse for him. God isn't laying this out as a punishment. It's a consequence. It's a consequence for his actions. The very way that you make a living, how can it produce anything now? Because now you are cursed. Life is not going to go well for you. And how does Cain respond to this? This is the key, okay? This is the key. His response to this is the key. Verse 13 says, Cain replied to the Lord, "My punishment is too great for me to bear. You have banished me from the land and from your presence. You have made me a homeless wanderer. Anyone who finds me will kill me." Whose fault? Is it Cain's fault? He's blaming God. Thank you very much. He's blaming God. Yeah, God, it's your fault. What did Adam do when God was like, "Hey, what's going on here? What did you do? Did you eat from the tree I didn't do?" What did he say? "Well, the woman you gave me did it," right? Wait a minute, time out. What? Right? So he's putting it back on God here. This is his response to God intervening, going like, "This is what's going to happen to you now," right? "I'm laying out what your life is going to look like. You continue in this way. This is what it's going to be like." And he says, "Oh, it's not fair." Anybody hear your kids in this? You got parents? Yeah, right? Like, "Oh, that's not fair." Well, it is what it is, right? But that's the thing he's saying. He's like, "You did this." And of course, he's concerned about what? Someone's going to do what? Do the same thing that he did to Abel, right? He is concerned that someone's going to avenge Abel, take vengeance on him. That's what that crying out, the blood crying out from the ground, it's all about vengeance. This is that cultural mindset that they are in. If someone does something wrong to you, you have a right to get vengeance on them. And later on in the story, okay, I'm going to give you a little cheat here. Later on in the story, there's a bunch of commandments that address to reining in how you can retaliate against someone. Instead of somebody poking your eye out and you going off and killing them and their whole family, God says, no, eye for eye. Someone knocks out a tooth, you don't go and annihilate all of their whole land and take it over. Nope, tooth for tooth. This should sound a little bit familiar to us, right? And that's all about reining in this retaliation because they're all so driven by vengeance, this crying out, "My innocent blood." Was Abel innocent? Absolutely. Did he do anything wrong to Cain? No. He's this righteous one that is being killed by the evil one. Does that sound familiar? Okay, well, the New Testament writers reflect upon this. Again, back into Hebrews chapter 12, verse 24. "You have come to Jesus," who we're going to see is the righteous one. "You have come to Jesus, the one who mediates the new covenant between God and people, and the sprinkled blood which speaks of forgiveness instead of crying out for vengeance like the blood of Abel." Abel's blood, this innocent blood, is crying out, "God, you need to avenge me," right? "I'm innocent. My life was taken from me, and you need to do something about it. Justice needs to happen. And Jesus, who is this righteous one, his blood that is spilled or sprinkled in this way cries out for, is it vengeance? No. Forgiveness. To forgive people. To forgive these people, right? And it's connected a little bit into the Genesis 4, verse 15, because God's going to say, you know, "No, I'm going to protect you still," right? It says this, "The Lord replied, no, for I will give a sevenfold punishment to anyone who kills you," right? Let me ask this. Who is taking vengeance? God. Vengeance is for God to do because God can handle it. He knows the right limit and what's appropriate. He's not going to put that into our hands to do that because we just don't do a good job of it, okay? Right? And so God is saying, I'll take care of it. Now, of course, we're like, oh, there's a mark on Cain. What does that mark mean? And sevenfold and all that, right? We get that. But if you continue to read this story, that you see how Cain, if he would have done the right thing at the beginning, it would be a different story. What is that right thing? Have you picked up on it yet? Not kill Abel, but even before then, he didn't do the right thing at the altar, right? If he would have acknowledged that he had been wrong and sought forgiveness, God would have forgiven him. Completely different story. Having God intervene and saying, listen, if you do the right thing, and Cain says, you're right. I was wrong to feel this way. Abel didn't do anything wrong. It's me, my own stuff, and not trusting you, or my own way about going about life and thinking, I don't need you, God. If I just said, I'm sorry for that. I need your forgiveness. God would give it to him, right? When he intervenes with them. And even at the end, instead of saying, you know, yeah, I killed Abel, and like, God says, here's what's going to happen. Here's the consequence. If he would have just said, instead of like, God, it's your fault, he said, wow, I've made a mess of this. God, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? Different story, right? Different outcome, different everything. And it's like Cain is never too far gone to get forgiveness. He just never seeks it out. He never acknowledges that he has done something wrong, and he never asks God for forgiveness. What's the right thing to do? Acknowledge that you've done stuff wrong and ask for forgiveness. It's that simple, people. In fact, I'm not the only one that picks up on this, but and we'll get to the New Testament things, but Cain's line never does that. If you continue reading in the story, you see a genealogy of his that leads up to a guy named Lamech. Lamech is horrible. He is one of the most violent people in the Bible to this point. And he's like, you think Cain was bad? I'm way worse. In fact, it shows up into a song that he sings to his two wives because, you know, he's collecting women like property. And he sings a song about how somebody has done something to him, and he took vengeance on them on his own and killed them. Listen to what it says. This is down in Genesis 4, verse 23. Ada and Zillah, this is his two wives, hear my voice. Listen to me, you wives of Lamech. I have killed a man who attacked me, a young man who wounded me. If someone kills Cain is punished 7 times, then the one who kills me will be punished 77 times. You thought Cain was bad? I got a whole world coming after you. I am 77 times worse than Cain ever was, right? This is a bad dude, and he's boastful about it. Nothing he does he acknowledge is wrong. Everything he does, it's right. You see how this life that Cain has lived is contribute to this person, his great-great-great-grandson, right? That's just living in this way. And you know, there's New Testament writers that reflect on this very story, this part right here. This very story. Peter, one of Jesus' disciples, he's listening to Jesus. He's hearing Jesus talk about forgiveness and forgiving others and things like that, and loving one another, all those things. And he's reflecting on this story of Cain and Abel. And so then he brings this question to Jesus because he's picking up. He's connecting the dots. That's about forgiveness that Jesus wants instead of vengeance. Matthew verse 21 and 22. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? 7 times? No, not 7 times, Jesus replied, but 70 times 7. The phrase is word for word what Lamech said. So instead of dealing with vengeance in this way, the way Lamech would, we flip it on its head. And we forgive just as much. Which brings us back to us. How do we forgive other people that have done things wrong to us if we can't first understand our own need for it and experience actually receiving God's forgiveness. So, now I'm not the only one that's picked up on this. As you can see, New Testament writers are doing this. Remember the Hebrews 12 verse we looked at? Well, it expounds on that and helps gives us a little more guidance. Hebrews 24 through 25. You've come to Jesus, the one who mediates the new covenant between God and people, and to the sprinkled blood, which speaks of forgiveness instead of crying out for vengeance like the blood of Abel. Be careful that you do not refuse to listen. Do not refuse to do what is right. Okay? Be careful that you do not refuse to listen to the one who is speaking. For if the people of Israel did not escape when they refused to listen to Moses, the earthly messenger, we will certainly not escape if we reject the one who speaks to us from heaven. Who is the righteous one that mediates and is speaking to us from heaven? Jesus. He's talking about forgiveness. So let's not refuse to do what is right. The thing that Jesus is telling us to do. The thing that was the right thing for Cain to do from the very start and has had chance after chance, opportunity after opportunity to acknowledge that he is in the wrong so that he can return to this relationship with God and God will forgive. That's the hope of this whole thing. God forgives you. Can we acknowledge that we need forgiveness? Will you listen to the one speaking to you from heaven? So here's what I want to do. I just want to invite you into a time of reflecting on that. That the right thing for you to do right here in this moment, I don't care if you've been following Jesus your entire life, brand new concept for you, but take the time to say, you know what? I want to do the right thing. And I need to acknowledge the wrong things that I have done. And God, I ask that you would forgive that. Through Jesus, through his blood that cries out for forgiveness, not vengeance, I need your forgiveness. Okay? I invite you to do that here at this time. Take a moment to do that.